Hello and welcome to this podcast series with postgraduate students in the Geography Department in Maynooth. So this is a series of interviews with students who are taking the MA module in Spatial Justice. And those students this year at least are drawn from a number of disciplines: sociology, anthropology, media studies. And today we have Jennifer O'Malley, who is an MA student in from the sociology department, and her research is looking at the agricultural or agri-food system in Ireland, particularly through the concept or lens of the metabolic rift, Marx's concept of the metabolic rift. So, which is something that we've covered in a previous interview. And Jennifer has had the great fortune of working with the great Eamon Slater and Owen O'Flaherty in the sociology department, who are two of the kind of leading scholars looking at metabolic rift in Ireland. So we're looking forward to your enlightening insights, Jennifer, not to put too much pressure on you. But maybe we could start with you introducing yourself a little bit more, and particularly talking about how you got interested in the topic of agriculture and the metabolic rift.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for that lovely introduction, Patrick. So, hi everyone. I'm a master's student with the Department of Sociology here at Maynooth University, and my research interests focus mostly on environmental sociology and the relationship between nature and society. And as part of the MA program, I had the opportunity to take part in the Spatial Justice module, and I found it very interesting and helpful to further my knowledge and understanding around spatial and geographical aspects of justice and injustice for individuals and communities. I suppose I became interested in the topic of the metabolic rift because I've always had an interest in Ireland's history, especially regarding the Irish famine and colonialism. And it was through my undergraduate studies in sociology that I gained a deeper interest in Ireland's relationship with the land and how that has evolved over time. It was through my studies of the literature of the likes of Karl Marx, where articles such as The Irish Question and John Bellamy Foster's The Rift of Éire, that I became interested in the concept of the metabolic rift in an Irish context, and how colonialism as a social process had penetrated into all aspects of Irish society, even its soil. Then, as my master's program, I undertook a module with Dr. Eamon Slater of the Sociology Department called Nature and Society. This focused mainly on the change and interconnection relationship between nature and society, and looks beyond Marx's concept of the metabolic rift, not only as a point of extraction of the nutrients of the soil, but the socio-ecological process that connected the soil, the consumption of food, and how that affects the health of consumers. And then it was through further studies and examining the life cycle of an organic commodity, using the example of bread, and looking at the various production processes that an organic commodity or food product undergoes from the time of its cultivation and the different stages of production, how the product is altered to make it more enticing and to prolong its shelf life until it's ready for consumption, and then the impacts of this on food health. And this is where I got the idea to investigate the overproduction of food and how that contributes to food waste and the impact that these interconnecting processes have in the environment, and that's the title of my master's thesis. So I suppose that's how I became interested in the metabolic rift and then Ireland's agri-food system and the role of capitalism.
Thanks, Jennifer. That was it. It really goes to show when you're talking about that how, once you start looking at food, it opens up all sorts of intersecting issues, from the production to consumption and waste, along the whole kind of food supply chain. It really is sort of such a rich, area to look at, and requires so much more kind of critical analysis like you're doing. So thanks for that introduction. I guess the obvious place to start, and as I said, we've already touched on metabolic rift in previous interviews, but I'd like you to sort of maybe elaborate on it more, and particularly, which I think is so interesting, the idea that Marx developed the concept of metabolic rift, at least in part through his analysis and engagement with what was happening in Ireland in the mid 19th century. And that's something that can often be forgotten when these concepts are cut adrift from, the places and times where they were developed. So what was going on, I guess, in the mid 19th century? Why was Marx, and Engels, why were they looking at Ireland? And why was Ireland such a, I guess, such a an important place for thinking about the relationship between capitalism and ecology?
Well, I suppose when we look at the concept of the metabolic rift and that it derives from Karl Marx, it describes the shift in the relationship between nature and society, and the increase in lack of connection between humans and nature under capitalism. And I suppose it was Marx's way of articulating ecological disruption. In his exploration of the establishment and expansion of capitalism, he describes how capitalism severed the relationship between humans and nature, and then that ended up with the estrangement of humans within a capitalist society from their natural environment. The basis of our existence then resulted in an irreparable rift in the metabolism prescribed by the natural laws of life itself. So as a social concept, I suppose it can be understood to be linked to the labour process. That's a big factor in an Irish context, and the unequal exchange between nature and society. It was further developed then by John Bellamy Foster and other theorists to try and explain further the ecological disruption under capitalism. And the interdependent processes, I suppose, of social metabolism.
Could I
And
just
then,
just stop you there, just because I think it would be interesting, especially because you highlighted it, to talk more about the labour process, because I think that's so central to this this analytic framework that Marx offered, which sort of helps cut through this idea that, farming is bad, or like labour is bad, that labour is sort of destructive of nature, that there's some kind of, inherent or natural tendency of humans to overexploit nature, as if nature and society are separate, as opposed to always being intermingled and connected through these metabolic exchanges. And the question is, like, what labor processes or how do humans produce nature and interact with nature in ways that are more or less sustainable? Capitalism being an unsustainable way of interacting or producing nature. Maybe you could just talk a little bit about the importance of labour, and specifically in the Irish context, because I know that Eamon Slater has done such good work on this, the different kinds of labour and the different kinds of agricultural practices, I guess, that were either eliminated over time through the colonial agricultural
yeah, I was about to get to that. I suppose the concept of the metabolic rift in an Irish context, as you know, it can be traced back to Ireland's agricultural economy of the 18th and 19th century, which seen colonialism, as I said earlier, as a social process penetrating to all aspects of Irish society, even the soil. And when we look at Marx's, the analysis, sorry, of Marx's 1867 speech on the Irish question, we can see that it was a combination of factors there that were coordinated by a colonial regime, which included government, police, landlords, and aristocrats that impacted Ireland through nature and society. We can see that this system of repression was mostly based on imperialist extractive economic relations. And that's seen what I suppose you could call the free gifts of Irish labour and commodity production and exportation resulting in the rifts between nature and society. So I suppose this became evident in an Irish context as crops and animal products produced in Ireland's agricultural fields, seeing the nutrients such as phosphorus, nitrogen, that were integrated in those products. So these were removed from the soil with the products and exported to Britain. And the consequences of this then resulted in soil impoverishment, as the nutrients were not replaced naturally, and the product's exportation, through the product's exportation. And to understand this in an Irish context, you'd have to look at how this connects to property, technical and food regimes that created the foundation for the emergence of a colonial metabolic rift, which was mostly underpinned by a rack renting system. And that's seen the work of the likes of cottiers who are trying to live off the land, ridge systems, and any other type of substance to try and fertilize and replenish the land. It was defeated because of the intense overproduction of crops to meet increase in rent demands by landlords. And this resulted in soil exhaustion due to structural failures, I suppose, in society. John Bellamy Foster goes further on this, and he also suggests that it was the intensified plundering of Ireland's resources that resulted in the metabolic transfer, which increased the vulnerability of not only the country, but the people and its soil. And then we can see that this was because of the use of intensive methods of cultivation to increase yields, and resulted in the loss of soil vitality, to the loss of nutrients that were essential to try and sustain crop production.
Okay, that's a really sort of, you know, thoroughgoing and comprehensive account of the metabolic rift and the historical context from which it emerges. I guess a kind of a question that I imagine some listeners might have is that, okay, that was all well and good. That was colonial times. We know that things were bad. We know that there was exploitation of Irish lands, of Irish, farmers. But, you know, independence came. Ireland was a sovereign nation. Those types of core periphery relationships that sort of, you know, dominated our agricultural economy, you know, presumably ended with formal decolonization. But that's not the case, you know. And you know, maybe you could say a little bit about how the metabolic rift as a concept doesn't just apply to a colonial phase of agricultural development, but can also be usefully applied to post-colonial, in inverted commas, Irish agriculture. Maybe you could say a little bit about that, and maybe also, you know, what is different about some of the relationships that now exist in Irish agriculture in terms of the drivers of, you know, pollution, the drivers of soil exhaustion, climate change, these sorts of things.
Yeah, I suppose in a contemporary context now, we see that Ireland's agri-food industry continues to bear the legacies of a colonial history. The deindustrialization of the past led to Ireland becoming an agrarian nation, and that's still very much evident today, as the country's reliability on food production remains a main source of capital. The country's agri-food industry has grown from strength to strength over the years. It's been spurred on by political and economic policies that promote exploitation of nature and natural resources. In 2015, the abolition of, say, like the milk quotas, together with lower production costs, resulted in larger investments in the cattle and dairy industries. These were backed by a demand for food, and which led to an increase in farm productivity and profit overall. And then there's also the downward pressure from retailers looking for lower retail prices all the time to offer consumers a better deal. And this has resulted in serious demands all the way through the supply chain. Recent statistics from the National Farm Survey 2019 have suggested that there's only 34% of farmers in Ireland that are actually viable, with the majority of these being dairy farms. And then you have the efforts to maintain margins through this type of business sees that all other parts down up the supply chain try to reduce costs. And by doing this, farming is being forced then to become bigger, to farmers take on more lands, take on more stock, more cattle. to remain viable, a viable farmer business. So this kind of shows Ireland's dependence on exportation and how it bears the legacies of colonial history, because the capitalistic processes of agricultural production are mostly determined through complex global commodity chains. Ireland's export industry relies on the rich natural resources that we have, the likes of agriculture, mining, the fisheries. This is probably around 60% of Ireland's manufacturing exports now are part of global supply chains. And that's probably one of the biggest ratios in the world at present. We can also look at the agri-food sector from an Irish perspective and how the universal requirement for food will increase drastically over the next century as the world's population increases. And that will see the sustainability of food raising regimes going to face serious increase in challenges as modern industrial economies are more reliant on a stable output to produce goods and services. And I suppose this is where we'll see the implications for the natural environment. The addition of large amounts of mineral fertilizer and other pollutants will be required to maintain these yields and to meet global food production overall.
Thanks, Jennifer. And I guess, you know, following on from that sort of picture that you're painting of, you know, these complex and, you know, globalized, you know, agri-food supply chains. You know, one of the things, as hard as it is to try to sort of, you know, to illustrate or to represent those supply chains or commodity chains, one of the things it can do is help, you know, shift our the focus of the debate away from sort of farmers versus the environment, or, you know, farmers versus you know, urban consumers, because there is this whole load of stuff that connects, you know, the farmer in the field with the person who's buying their food, you know, from Lidl or from an organic shop or wherever. And I wonder, could you say something about, I don't know, you know, just for listeners, could you, you know, even talk a little bit about, you know, who it is that sort of benefits from this model? You know, obviously some farmers are making some profits, but in the grander scheme of things, where does the surplus value, you know, the profits of this kind of, you know, unsustainable global agri-food system, where are they accruing? You know, who is it that's drawing off that money? And, you know, is it, you know, and why is it so important for us to understand that in order to sort of, I guess, challenge the root causes of this unsustainable agri-food system?
Yeah, well, I suppose we'd first have to look at, as you say, who are the ones that's profiting most from Ireland's agri-food industry. And then when we break it down, you can see that there's around maybe 135,000 farms with an average landholding of about 32 hectares that are pasture-based enterprises. And then you have processors, producers, and those in that control the supply and commodity chains who would be the main players in the industry. And it's the interconnecting relationship between all the above players in the Irish agri-food industry that has kept Ireland to the forefront when it comes to competitiveness in the export market. And it's worth an estimated maybe 13 odd billion a year. That has seen an increase of 64% since 2010. In 2018, Ireland's seen the ninth consecutive year of growth in agri-exports by volume. And we export to over 180 different countries around the world. The Irish agri-food industry, it continues to be a crucial part of the economy and is the best part of nearly 180,000 people employed when you go through every single part of the chain, whether it's farms, production, processing, retailing. It's such a big industry. It has faced problems recently, the likes of Brexit, rising costs and inflation, and climate change. I suppose when we examine the impact of the abolition of policies such as that, as the milk quotas in 2015, the likes of milk production, that's estimated to go up by 50% over the next 10 years. So we can see that those that are in charge, the main players in the industry, the large companies, large beef industry companies like Goodman's and that they're the ones that's benefiting most. You have the smaller farmers who they will try and increase their profit through taking on more land. It's investing more cattle, and then you might get the odd incentive through payments and stuff like that from the government. But when you add it all together, it's the main players that's really impacting nowadays. And the other people is retailers. Retailers are the main ones because they're pushing the cost down all the time. I worked in retail for 20 years and I've experienced this. And the main thing that they were looking for was little waste and large profits. And it was all about getting the customer in and to spend as much as they possibly can. Anything that they can do to entice you to spend, that's what they want. And this all goes back down again to the farmer that's just trying to make a living. The agri-food industry, it does continue to be a crucial part of the economy. It's being faced by a big range of problems. And I suppose recent reports, when you look at the environment, we can see that the Environmental Protection Agency, they've come out and said that the agricultural industry was responsible for 37.1% of the greenhouse gas emissions in 2020. That was an increase of 1.4% on the previous year. And it's nearly 11% above 1990 levels. And this was down to an increase in the use of nitrogen, fertilizer, lime, and dairy cow numbers increasing and milk production. And then that impacts again back to the soil and the depletion of the soil. So we can see that the soil then is depleting faster than it can be newly regenerated. So at the moment, there's probably a total of maybe 33% of the world's soils that are considered moderately or highly degraded, with as little as 60 years remaining of viable topsoil in the world. And when we look at the EPA's 2020 report on Ireland's environment, this gives us a stark warning to the deepening rift between nature and society, especially in an Irish context. And it outlines that up to nearly 60% of land is used for agriculture. And we kind of need to take a step back there from this kind of intensive farming and farming practices, which continue to have an effect on the environment and human health at present. And this kind of highlights how food processing and production affects land in the form of soil erosion and the constant need to maintain standards of production that's pushed on farmers and the economy by the large producers, and it's an increasing challenge for food systems also.
Thanks for that, Jennifer. Really detailed answer to that question. I guess, you know, we're running out of time, so I'll just end on a final question or two sort of related final questions. So the first one is about spatial injustice or spatial justice. How does an understanding of spatial justice sort of fit into all of this, you know, work that you're doing? And secondly, how might it be applied to a more critical understanding of the agri-food system in Ireland?
Yeah, well, I suppose when we look at environmental justice and the unequal distribution of environmental costs in an Irish context, we can see that the relationship between Ireland's economy, exportation and climate change is a mix of social and environmental processes that are produced and reproduced across various sites and systems, with each mutually constituting the other, which results in human and ecological consequences. Ireland's position as a leader in the agri industry it may be economically viable, but has come at a cost to future generations through ecological sustainability. And this has been mostly hidden from view. A recent article now that I've read as part of the spatial justice module by Nixon there on the concept of slow violence and environmentalism of the poor comes to mind, because that highlights the dependence of not only developing but developed countries on extractive and exportation industries to sustain rich economies, regardless of the silent and invisible consequences that this capitalistic system has on the environment. And I suppose the impact that agriculture has on biodiversity because of changes in agricultural practice, this still remains one of the biggest threats to the likes of habitats and species. And I suppose there's a better need for a monitoring system and an ecosystem mapping to assess the overall impact of these changes in agriculture, especially agricultural practices, and how they've impacted local and national biodiversity as a result of high impact grazing. A recent article there by the EPA suggested that the main pressures to the likes of habitats and ecologically sustainable grazing levels, such as undergrazing, overgrazing, and grasslands, these are all threatened by over-intensification of farming and even land abandonment. And this kind of sees the problem go from one extreme to another. You have the loss of nutrients to waters from agriculture and there's a significant pressure on Ireland's water quality as well. The excessive nutrient loss to waters can lead to increased levels of growth, like the algae and plants, and significant ecological impacts in the rivers, lakes, and rains, waters, and all that. And I suppose it's the pollutants issued for surface waters in Ireland as well. There's around 50% of rivers are polluted between 2012. And I know agriculture is not the only pressure on the water environment. That has had a big, significant commitment to environmental measures, but more action by the agriculture sector at both a local and regional level is needed to improve the water quality as well, and to make sure that we have good quality public health, good agri-food industry, and to keep inward investment. I suppose contemporary Ireland struggle to stabilise the negative environmental changes experienced through the likes of climate change, and is to find a more sustainable way of an agri-food production that could lead to greater environment benefits in the long term. It is a challenge to deliver a sustainable agricultural production system that's needed, say, like put forward by Foodwise. That looks to protect not only the waters, the environment, but you know, to ensure that we meet all our international commitments as well. A cutback in consumer demand, I suppose, and the need for constant access to large varieties of produce would lead to less food production and would help to contribute to a reduction in the amount of fertilizer spread on the land. The Irish agri-food industry, it must participate in reducing emissions at this stage instead of focusing on ways to sustain food production, which this could be achieved through technological advancement, changes in food consumption patterns, and mostly through the integration of environmental concerns into agricultural policy. I suppose recent changes, such as like the greening payments and that, it does encourage farmers to steer away from monoculture and have a mixed crop design with more ecological focused areas for nature, but rather than food production. But the relationship between agriculture policies and the system processing also needs further investigation, and it's locked within food chains And it's these sustainable production practices that suggest that policies support profit at any cost, regardless of environmental consequences. So that's something that really needs to have a look at. And then when we look at agriculture in Ireland, it's currently responsible for around a third of greenhouse gas emissions and accounts for around 99% of ammonia emissions, according to the EPA. The agri-food industry is happening at the expense of the environment at the moment, where patterns continue to impact emissions, climate change, water quality and biodiversity. And this has had some negative feedback in relation to Ireland's reputation as a green food producer. And we would need to see current measures to try and focus on more efficient ways to reduce emissions. And I suppose this could be achieved by eliminating the interconnections between livestock numbers, the excess use of fertilizers, and the deterioration of our water qualities. Structural transformations that see a shift from capitalistic industrial agriculture to a more alternative model, one that transforms the agri-food industry, seeing a more diverse process, one that shows a more equal exchange between the players in the agri-food industry, would see less control by large companies together with the introduction of new food regimes. And I think this would undertake best policy agro-ecocultural practices. And these innovations, together with a more cost-effective approach by industry, would help to reduce emissions through incentivizing a switch to cleaner energy. I suppose the addition of advisory and economic support for companies, it would be a big factor here. And it would enable Ireland to meet its climate targets then in a way that's fair to both the environment and to industry. Ireland's dependence on the agri-fuels industry still stems from our turbulent history of colonialism, which has transferred over time, and this needs to be looked at.
Thanks, Jennifer. And you kind of did really well there to loop it back to where we started. And I think a recurring theme in these the research that you're all doing so far is this sort of desire to look at this longer temporal scale and the ways in which, you know, the legacies of colonialism and imperialism continue to very much shape the face of agricultural systems or other kinds of development in this country. And I think, you know, one of the real benefits of your work and your analysis is that it also, in the context of very sort of heated and contested debates around farming and agriculture in this country, it shifts blame away from individual farmers and what farmers are kind of responsible for, and tries to draw attention to the systems that they are a part of and the sort of very powerful actors that make up those systems and who ultimately benefit and profit from the current agri-food model, which, as you've outlined and evidenced so well, is not good for the environment and is not good for the majority of farmers either. So thanks so much for that, for your work and for talking about it. And I know that you are hopefully going to be embarking on a PhD, is that right, in sociology?
Yeah, please God, yeah.
Yeah, so and looking at these same kinds of questions. So I really look forward to seeing the work that you do, and I'm really glad that you're doing it because it's so essential and needed. So thanks very much.
Thanks, Patrick.